Do our choices even matter, or is destiny this predetermined path we're set on at birth? If we had made a different choice in our life, what would it look like today? I'm sure that everyone thinks about this question. I mean, there's countless movies and TV shows exploring this concept all the time. You know, there was a whole episode of the show Community where they were going to roll a dice and one of the characters didn't want them to because then it opens the door for so many other possibilities. Is that true? Is there some alternate realities out there where you, say, didn't go to school or where you didn't meet your wife or didn't meet your friends? And what does that version of you look like? Ed Fairburn is an artist I have known for quite some time now, and his work has spread across the globe to reach countless people. His style revolves around these old maps that he finds and draws portraits on top of, blending these faces in with the grids of the roads. It's very detailed and it's very beautiful works, and it's this signature style that has allowed Ed to reach heights most artists dream of. But what if I told you that his entire career and his style could have been drastically different based on one simple decision that he made? I am Jacob Johnson. This is the Mired as Real podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, Ed Fairburn. Right after the break. It's another episode and another time for me to say thank you to everyone who listens to the show. It's your support, you listening, that helps this show grow, and I couldn't thank you enough. Just you sharing the show with anyone you know so that they can listen as well helps us grow. If you want to take that a step further, you can also sign up for our Patreon page at patreon.com/miredisreal, where I'm going to be uploading some extra content. You can also check out limited edition prints that we have available on our website, miredisreal.com. I'm doing these prints with previous podcast guests and other artist friends, so go on over there and check it out. Thank you for listening, and back to the episode.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Ed Fairburn. I am an artist based in the UK, and I basically turn old paper maps into portraits. I repurpose paper maps, atlases, and draw the human form through the patterns found in topography.
Even if you don't know who Ed is off the top of your head, you have most definitely seen his work before. His work stretches far and wide across the world, and in part due to this massive list of companies and people he has done commissioned works for. You know, he's done works for like the John Wick 4 movie, or like Indiana Jones, or the John Lennon estate. But you don't just start making works for famous people's estates and blockbuster movie releases overnight. Where in the UK are you based, and is that where you grew up?
So I'm based in Southampton, which, as it sounds, is south. It's on the south coast. I was actually born here originally many years ago, but I've moved around quite a lot. And yeah, now I'm back here again. It's not super far from London. To give a bit of context, it's about a couple of hours on the train from London. So yeah.
Moving around a lot as a kid led Ed to spending more time outside of the big city and in a small town.
I was born in Southampton. I spent my earliest years here and in Bournemouth, which is over the way from Southampton. But where I moved around quite a lot when I was young. I spent most of my childhood in a small market town called Diss, which is... That's D-I-S-S. It's just basically in between Norfolk and Suffolk, which is kind of the middle of nowhere here in the UK. It's a very rural sort of area. And that market town, I really enjoyed it there. I mean, it was a really great place to grow up. And I would say I wouldn't exactly say it was sort of suburban. I lived in sort of a suburban setting, but because it was such a small town, it was sort of everything was in the town. And yeah, it was a really great community. Really enjoyed it there. So I moved away to go to college. I actually went to Cardiff, which is in Wales, which is technically a different country from England. I'm still part of the UK. And yeah, I stayed there for a bit and I sort of went full circle. I've come back here to Southampton.
Like we have heard from many artists on previous episodes, living in a small town leads you to look inward and find fun wherever you can. Often for these artists, it's drawing. And Ed was no exception.
I was kind of getting into art for the first time there. I was sort of spending my evenings drawing, and I know I was kind of loosely inspired by the place I was living in. I'm not sure I would have been drawing or doing some of the pursuits that I was doing, like, had it not been for being there. I think if I was, like, growing up in the city, it's weird because in the city there are, like, more sort of things to do, different things to do. But I think for that reason, I would be less focused. I think in that small town, I'm not going to say I was bored all the time because I kind of enjoyed what, you know, the things that interested me. But I think with fewer distractions, you know, around, you know, it's not like I could go to the cinema every night. I went out and played with friends and stuff like that, you know, like all kids do growing up. But I think a lot of the time, you know, with less to do, it was kind of a bit more, my experience growing up was a little bit more inward. And I was sort of, I was at home quite a lot, just kind of drawing and reading and sort of doing things that in the long run now have really benefited me and what I do now.
For me, I always loved drawing like cartoons like Dragon Ball Z and Ninja Turtles and skulls for some reason, skull and crossbones, like pirate flags. But Ed, he enjoyed drawing portraits.
So I've always been more of a kind of draft person, more somebody who likes to draw more than they like to paint. I do paint a little bit, not so much these days. I was kind of interested in photorealism and drawing like super realistic, like, well, as realistic as I could make it at the time at that age. Obviously, you know, it's, you kind of go through like an improvement process. And yeah, I just enjoyed drawing portraits.
When Ed was growing up, the internet existed, but it was not accessible as it is today. So he had to find inspiration for his drawings in whatever he could find lying around the house. And it was one of these first drawings of his that, looking back, almost foreshadows the future of his work to come.
It's funny, actually. I remember one of the first portraits I drew. So I used to borrow my mum's magazines quite a lot and, like, you know, look at all the adverts and stuff and sort of draw, use, you know, those sorts of things as references. And yeah, this is when I was like 13, 14, that kind of age. And it was kind of before, it wasn't before the internet, but like we were on like dial-up internet. It was like, you know, now, you know, you've got broadband, you've got YouTube, like drawing tutorials and all kinds of amazing resources for artists now. So I was just drawing kind of like from anything I could find, really. And one of the first portraits I drew, I remember actually, I completely forgot about it until fairly recently, was a portrait of John Lennon. And that sort of went full circle because I did some work for John Lennon for Universal Music recently, earlier this year. And it was just weird to kind of like see that go full circle. It was like, oh, hang on, I've drawn this person before.
And that moment where everything came full circle, what was that like?
I mean, that didn't click, the whole full circle element. It didn't click for a little while. It was only after a while I was like, hang on, no, I've drawn John Lennon's portrait before many, many years ago. But that was, that was cool because, I mean, you know, it was sort of something, you know, it was something kind of official. It was working with Universal Music. So to kind of have that, to go through that sort of, you know, decades later kind of thing, that was great. That was really enjoyable.
Drawing was not the only thing he was interested in. In fact, he sort of jumped around interest quite a lot.
I really enjoyed lots of kind of like weird, like I was really interested in lots of like niche stuff. Like, and I think a lot of it was based on the fact that my parents kind of bought me lots of books growing up on, you know, random things that, like, you know, I find really, you know, natural sciences. Like, you know, I used to collect like rocks and fossils, stamps. I used to collect stamps because that kind of ran in my family a bit. I was interested in meteorology, like studying the weather for quite a long time. I was somebody that wanted to be something different every other week, but all of my interests kind of revolved around fairly similar areas, as I say, kind of natural sciences and sort of history. And I was fascinated by calligraphy and illumination as well, and the sort of history of all of that.
What I'm interested in is, what did all this mean for Ed and becoming an adult? Was he going to follow his passion for art or one of his many other hobbies? The paths we set on and the ones we end up on can be very different. What was it for Ed? Did you have a plan of what you were going to do after high school, or was, you know, there no plan?
Yeah, I wasn't really sure. I mean, as I say, like I sort of changed my mind every other week. And I think actually at one point, Ironically, I wanted to be a cartographer, someone who made maps, and it's kind of weird how it sort of, you know, how it's all sort of turned out now. But yeah, so I mean, I for a while as well in my teens, I was really into aviation. I wanted to be a pilot for quite a long time. I did actually learn to fly as well when I was about 16, 17. I did some sort of light single engine flying and also some gliding. I did my solo in a glider when I was about 17. That's sort of like a, you know, sailplane type glider. And you know, that had a huge impact on me. I just really, really enjoyed flying for a long time.
For all of my UK listeners, you already know this, but for everyone else, this is how the schooling system works in the UK, according to Ed, at least. You do what's basically high school, and then you have a college, which is very broad learning, you know, the fundamental stuff. And then you go to university, where you sort of focus in on your major. I'm going to let Ed explain to you what those classes were that he took in college.
So I was due to go to college, and you do, you can do something kind of vocational, or you can do more academic, sort of like what they call A levels. And I did, when I left school, I did three of the probably strangest combination of A levels that you could maybe imagine. I did maths, physics, and art, which is, you know, very, very sciencey, very kind of technical, and art.
And while drawing was still a very big interest and influence on Ed, he thought, like most people did, that drawing and being an artist wasn't a valid career path, and he was more focused on becoming a pilot.
Because at that point in time, I wanted to be a pilot, like professionally. I wanted to kind of go into that. I kind of, at the end of college, like at the end of sixth form where I did those A-levels, I failed two completely. I basically spelled my name right on the paper, and that was about it. I literally didn't even get enough points for a grade. So I failed two of those, and I passed one with flying colors, and you can probably guess which that was. So it was kind of like, yeah, I'm gonna go into art. And you know, from there I basically did a sort of foundation course at college, where I was able to kind of be creative full time.
Well, I guess his options became pretty simple at that point. He was good at art. He loved making art. Let's at least give it a shot, right? He also really loved the idea of being an artist. This idea of all this freedom you get working in your studio, making what you want to make. It was intriguing.
But then I guess I realized my natural skills sort of, and one interest that I kind of carried along the whole way was being creative and drawing and painting. And, you know, I kind of liked the idea of the freedoms that came with that sort of lifestyle and that way of living. And, you know, I've always thought, you know, if you're an artist, it's got to be like one of the least rigid, you know, kind of lines of work out there. You're literally making, you know, your path for yourself. You are not just creating the artwork, you're creating your path around the artwork and choosing where you want to go, what you want to do. And that's difficult, you know. I think that's really tough, actually. It's like kind of being faced with a blank sheet of paper sometimes, where you kind of want a bit of guidance sometimes, but ultimately I think the freedom to just create art is, I wouldn't trade it with anything. Wouldn't swap it for anything else.
Becoming an artist means there's no clear path to follow. That's a theme of this show, right? Everyone's path is different and you need to follow yours. While this idea of freedom to choose your own path can be very exciting, it's also scary because it requires much more hard work than most people realize. Even with the concerns of others and the general view of being a starving artist, Ed didn't care. He always had this ability to laser focus in on whatever it was he was working on. And at the time, he was laser focused in on making art a reality.
I think that people around me were kind of a bit like, you know, really, do you really want to go into that sort of thing? I had a lot of encouragement from, you know, people like my parents and, you know, but there were people that, you know, and, you know, you still get that. And I think in a way, it's totally justified, because it is perceived as perhaps a less viable career path. And I get those concerns, you know, but I just enjoyed it. I just enjoyed being creative. And I just thought, you know what, I don't really want to be in an office. I don't really want to be, you know, doing something that, you know, requires a very rigid sort of way of living.
It was then that Ed went to university for illustration.
So when it was time to go to university, that was when I chose basically to do illustration. I kind of chose because it was drawing. It was drawing more than anything else. I had quite an open and sort of flexible university course. We were given quite a lot of freedom. So it was primarily drawing, but it was also painting if we wanted it to be. It was even sculpting if we wanted it to be. It was even performance art if we wanted it to be. It was a very broad sort of progressive kind of idea of illustration, and it was really exciting because the campus I was at, I was kind of mixing a lot with like the fine arts lot, you know, all the people doing fine art, and that was really exciting. So I definitely felt like I was on the right path there. Yeah, definitely.
As Ed got closer to graduating university, he started to think about finding a job in the field of illustration.
I was always going to try. And you know, I remember my interview with my course leader at the time, who I asked him about getting jobs in illustration. Yeah, you know, at the end of the course, I remember saying to him, like, you know, do you, like, at this course, do you sort of help or give guidance on getting jobs in illustration? And he kind of laughed at me, not rudely, but he kind of laughed at the idea of that and said, no, there aren't jobs in illustration. It's a freelance culture. It's a freelance thing, you know? So that was kind of interesting, but I think when I wanted to sort of go into art and illustration at the end of my education, I wasn't really thinking that far ahead. I just always thought, you know what, it's fine. It's a long way away. I'll make a go of it. And if it doesn't work out, I'll just get a normal job, you know, like just something that I'm going to just do to pay to live, basically. So I thought, I'll have a go. I'll have a go at it.
He's not going to simply just apply for some jobs, right? So he's going to get a studio space and he's going to get a day job to keep the lights on and make his art when he can.
When I left university, I was still creating. I rented a studio space right around about the same time as I tried to get a sort of proper job in the real world. I thought, right, you know, I've left university, I've got to get a job now. And I thought, you know, I'm still going to try and create. I'm still going to try and, you know, make art and see what I can do with it. I got a real job. I got a proper job. I should stop saying that, actually, because art is very much a proper job. It's not, it doesn't really give a good impression if I keep saying it like that. But I got a job working in a cafe, basically sort of like waiting and making coffee, that kind of thing. I was doing that for about 2 weeks and I actually really loved it. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I'd done similar jobs in the past part-time, but that particular place where I was, the people I was working with, I really enjoyed it.
Around this time, it was 2012, and Ed was working as much as he could on his own art when he wasn't working his day job. His studio space was actually in an old church, and well, a lot of magic came out of that studio at that time.
It was a basement underneath the church. It was a very strange space, actually. It was a very weird, surreal kind of time. I was renting a studio there, and every night at the end of the day, I would walk home from this basement. And I used to pass like a number of charity shops, like a number of thrift stores. And I've always been, as someone who likes to collect things, you know, I like things that tell a story. I like to kind of not know what I'm going to find if I go into a shop. I like to sort of rummage through things and see interesting books and odds and ends, you know, collectible things. I used to go in the charity shops quite a lot, the thrift stores quite a lot. This one evening, I came across a map in one of the charity shops that I passed. And this map was a roadmap of Germany around the sort of Munich area. And it was 20 pence, which I think is roughly 25, 30 cents, something like that. Less than a dollar. It was like a really cheap buy. And I kind of looked at the map, I kind of unfolded it a bit, and I thought, yeah, these colors are interesting, you know, it's really nice, I like the patterns, and I just thought, yeah, I'm going to buy it, just add it to my collection of, you know, stuff that I have. You know, I had all kinds of, yeah, drawers full of, like, you know, old books and things like that, and sort of paper ephemera.
Little did he know at the time, but that cheap little map would set his art career on a path unlike anything else. You know how some artists don't want to just paint on canvas, so they head out into the street under the dark of night to plaster up works all over the streets and buildings? Well, Ed was doing his version of that, which he called off-road drawing.
Around about the same time, I was kind of interested in the idea of intervening with or hijacking, creatively hijacking unusual surfaces. So what I kind of think of now is like off-road drawing, where, you know, instead of just drawing on sort of plain paper, you know, I was kind of trying to draw on like all kinds of different surfaces and context. When I bought this map from the charity shop, I kind of looked at the patterns on that map over a course of sort of days and weeks. So I did this project in uni, postal art or mail art, where I would basically draw and paint over envelopes that I would put through the postal system just to see kind of what went through and, you know, the idea of kind of that sort of forced gallery space, you know, like sort of sharing a kind of unusual channel of sharing my work. So I was kind of interested in sort of weird stuff like that.
And of course, all of this ended up blending in with his favorite thing to draw, which was people.
Around about the same time, I was also, so this is kind of like a convergence of you know, various interests into one. I was really interested in drawing portraits, drawing people, and I'd always been interested in drawing people. It's like my kind of number one sort of favorite subject to draw. So all of this stuff kind of came together because the portraits I was doing, I was kind of like getting really into like the kind of fractal sort of patterns found on sort of skin and like the patterns within the human body. So that combined with the maps and kind of looking at the idea of like sort of place and belonging and kind of like the similarities found in patterns on the map and, you know, the systems in the human form, it kind of all kind of mushed together.
It was in this moment his signature style was born. He started working with maps more and more, blending the grid lines of the streets and land into the features of the human face.
And I just started working with these surfaces that were pre-patterned, you know, these maps, thinking, can I, you know, kind of change or can I sort of add to the rules of the map? Can I kind of like draw over some areas, like leave certain areas, like what will that look like? So it was all kind of just creative play, what I would consider to be creative play, just having fun and just exploring those interests. And that was the first time I'd worked with a map, and it very much spawned an interest in collecting maps. You know, I kind of now, you know, my interest for maps is like, you know, it's huge. I've got my map collection is vast. And I always look back, I always think about that 20 pence that I spent. And I always think that is the most significant, monumental investment I've ever made in my life. People invest huge amounts of money in things, and you know, I spent a lot of money going to university, and I, you know, don't get me wrong, I needed to go to university to go down the path that, you know, I found myself on. But you can spend, you know, tens of thousands of pounds at university, or you can just have some chance finding one day and just, you know, I'm kind of a big believer in chaos theory. I'm sort of fascinated by the small indecisions, or rather decisions we make throughout our lives, and, you know, just the idea of where they take you. You know, you kind of do things in life every day, you make lots of small actions that you know feel insignificant, but you just don't know like how, you know, the knock-on effect that things can have. So that chance find of buying that map for 20 pence, I often think about that.
And when you got the end result of that first map portrait, how did it feel?
I really loved the process, the actual working between some of the patterns on the map, like hatching and cross-hatching, like up to some of the boundaries and markings on the map. It was kind of like a punctuated process for me. It felt like a sort of safe process because it wasn't like getting lost in a huge sheet of paper. It was kind of like there were always kind of like the actual initial process. I felt like, you know, I can hide behind these patterns a bit. You know, when there's areas of ambiguity or areas I'm not confident with, I kind of like let the map do its thing. And that was kind of a really interesting thought for me, because that's then more the surface taking over than the actual thing. That first thing I created, I kind of felt like I was sort of onto something, not because I was really impressed with the result visually. I mean, I was kind of like, okay, this looks great, but also because I really enjoyed that process. I just kind of wanted to carry on that path. And I started exploring different types of map, looking at different pattern sets on the maps. And the idea every time was to essentially creatively hijack the surface and retain its original function, try and preserve the functionality of the map as much as possible while introducing my own, you know, imagery, kind of what I wanted to create.
As he continued to make these map works, he submitted them all around to various blogs online. And well, some of them picked him up and it started a snowball effect.
I think I submitted one of my map creations to like a design blog that I don't think even exists anymore. And that was Tumblr based. So literally overnight I woke up, I was like, what's this? Like all the kind of notes and things on this thing that had basically gone viral on Tumblr. So I wasn't using Tumblr sort of firsthand, but
his work was going viral. And without even knowing it, one of his favorite blogs, Colossal, found his work.
And funnily enough, like Colossal for me, when I was a student at uni, Colossal was like, that blog was like a huge source of inspiration for me. And it was kind of on my bucket list to get a feature on that website. I was like, one day I'm going to aspire to get a feature on that website. I got a feature on Colossal without even knowing. I didn't submit. And when I saw that, I just, it was just phenomenal, the feeling. Yeah, I couldn't quite believe it. So that was, I think they just picked up on my work that was kind of circulating on Tumblr sort of back in 2012.
I mean, Ed was killing it, right? Like he was, you know, featured on all these blogs, all these people were sharing his work. He was on Colossal. And at the same time, he even got the opportunity to have a few exhibitions. With all this attention now on his works, he started to put even more out there and all of the commissions started to come in.
Yeah, I was kind of producing more work around about the same time. I was kind of like, okay, you know, I'm doing something that I'm interested in and other people are interested in. So it kind of became, you know, it was never going to be like something that I would do forever, but it's turned into that. And I'm more than happy for that, really, because, you know, the more I work with maps, like truly, genuinely, the more I want to work with them, it's like, you know, increasing a circle of knowledge, you know, the kind of boundary of that circle also increases in size. You know, it's like I'm not running out of ideas. I'm not running out of maps I want to work with or things I want to draw. If anything, the more I create, the more sort of branches and paths that are opened up to me. So I'm really enjoying that. But I would say, yeah, probably after that first Colossal feature, that was kind of when things started to, you know, kind of pick up momentum and start to get more commissions and things like that.
And with all of that work coming in, Ed just no longer had any time for his day job. So as quickly as it came, he left and started focusing on full-time art. Being self-employed is a huge challenge. You have to cover everything yourself, and dealing with big projects like Ed could get stressful, but also feel very freeing to be able to do it all on your own.
Honestly, it felt, I felt good. Like, it felt pioneering, you know. It felt like I was doing something with my life that was kind of going in a very positive direction. At times I felt like I could kind of do anything. I was like, you know, it gave me a lot of confidence. I've gone through a lot of growth, in that time, and, you know, I've kind of settled down a bit. I've kind of gotten to grips with certain things that need to be gotten to grips with, you know, running a business, and done a lot of learning. I think like initially a lot of it was overwhelming, and, you know, I didn't find it easy a lot of the time. You know, now it's like, you know, I've had a chance, had years to kind of breathe and sort of get a handle on what it is that I want to do with my work. And of course, I'm still figuring a lot of that stuff out, but I'm kind of more, I don't know if it's just getting older or what, but you know, in my mid-30s now, I'm kind of just slowing down a bit and just being more content with, you know, what I'm putting out there and sort of my way of life, you know, my kind of lifestyle.
As time went on, he had built up a routine, but spending so much time alone in the studio, he started to feel a bit lost and was looking for that motivation again. Luckily, Ed met his now partner, and as his personal life has become more exciting, it's fueled his artwork.
I was on my own for quite a lot of my 20s. I was living in quite a remote place. And, you know, I kind of got to a point with my work where I was doing what I was doing and I was getting by, but I started to kind of lose motivation at times because I was kind of going through this whole, you know, what am I even doing this for anymore? Then in sort of around 2017, 2018-ish, 2018, I met my partner, Viola, and we started kind of building everything we have now. And, you know, it was kind of, suddenly, you know, I mean, I think art is so linked with, you know, your personal life. I'm sure it's not for everybody, but for me personally, are very much linked. It's kind of like your how you feel in the studio and your motivations for, you know, wanting to do something that you have to do on your own accord. Because if you're, you know, freelancing, if you're making art, you're not employed to do that. It's not like, you know, you're doing it off your own back. So the motivation has to be there.
Ed's workload has only grown over the years, and having his partner there to help manage other parts of the business while he spends more time in the studio actually making the art, it's become what most artists probably dream of. When it comes time for you to focus and get in the right state of mind to be creative, how do you achieve that?
A lot of the time, sort of doing this for work, you just have to suck it up and just get on with things sometimes. And I think sometimes working on commissions, it's much easier to do that because it's like, I don't have a choice. I have a deadline. I have to get on with this. For me personally, I find starting is always the hardest part of anything. And actually finishing, it's the middle bit's the easiest bit. Starting something, getting in that right frame of mind is difficult. You know, it's almost like entering a meditative process. You've got to be kind of like, you've got to be feeling good about things. You've got to be like clear of distractions. But you know, I'm sort of, you know, when I say finishing is hard as well, what I mean by that is like, I'll get my drawings to like 90%, 95%. And it's that last little bit at the end. I'm sure lots of people listening can relate. Like, you know, it's like, is it finished? Is it not finished? You know, am I going to overwork it? You know, it's like trying to figure that one out. It's really hard.
Just starting on a project or a task is probably the hardest part because you don't know if what you have in mind for the outcome is going to be what you want it to be or not. I find it best to just dive in. Be willing to make something that is not perfect. Be willing to make mistakes. And just do your best to fix what doesn't work as you go along. Often, once you get into the process of things, things start to flow and it becomes a lot smoother. But this can be applied to everything in one's life. From being creative to diving into the world of being self-employed, you won't know how to do everything and you won't know how to handle it until you try and find that footing along the way. Ed never had his life planned out ahead of time. He simply followed the signs and did what felt right in the same way he lets the lines of the map guide his pen.
I kind of respond to the maps. I respond to the landscape. So I'll look at the map and I'll see the kind of compositional weight of the map. I see where sort of something should kind of be moving from or to. I look for kind of blanker spaces or areas that have very distinctive patterns or kind of movements or feels to them. And I will plan there, you know, from there. And it's very much like, you know, a painter, you know, creating like a large, you know, oil painting, will do small like roughs and things like that. So I kind of, yeah, I'll do some like rough planning, on a tablet and just sort of, see kind of like what can go where and sort of see how I respond, to the landscape in that sense. Yeah. But working with the actual maps, working with the paper maps, for me is all part of the joy of what I do. It's the love of the actual paper, like feeling that paper that is very old under my fingertips and knowing the history of it and sort of the purpose it served before.
And I have one more question for you, which is, with seeing how things have played out and how your work reaches so far, and even people who probably don't even know who you are, it's touched them in some kind of way. How does that make you feel?
I mean, honestly, yeah, I'm proud. I'm happy with what I've achieved. I wouldn't lie and say, oh, it's just doesn't mean anything to me, because of course it means something to me. But it's all kind of incidental, you know. It all stems from the work and from my love of creating art. That's got to be at the core, you know, all the time is actually making the art. That's always going to be at the core. And I think the most successful people out there, whether it's in art or music, literature, whatever, you know, it's always the core thing that they do. Yeah, it kind of stems from that, really.
So even with the success and all of that, at the end of the day, all you really care about is doing what you love?
Ultimately, I would say truly yes. I want to be able to support myself, my partner, and I want to basically just carry on. And you know, this is kind of like what we were talking about earlier. You know, a decade ago, everything was quite overwhelming to me. And I was getting to grips with sort of certain things and trying to figure out what I wanted in my life and what I wanted to do with my work and what I wanted it to do for me. And, you know, now in my mid-30s, I'm a lot calmer. I'm a lot more content. My focus is very much on the work. Yeah, I don't take it for granted. It allows me to, you know, reaching lots of people and doing high-profile, high caliber sort of jobs for kind of commercial clients, that kind of thing. It allows me to do what I do now, but ultimately what I do now, I just want to live a sort of content life, really. And I think, isn't that what we all want, you know? It's kind of, I certainly don't take it for granted. And I also kind of, you know, I don't really give it a huge amount of thought, really, but like, I kind of just want to continue reaching people and kind of continue doing more. And, you know, it's having that healthy thirst, I think, for doing more. But as I say, it's always about the work first anyway. It's always work first. It's always the actual core of what I do. It's got to be the most important thing, right?
I mean, dude, what more can I say to that Ed didn't already say? Keeping the thing you love at the core of what you do and doing it because you desire to put something great out into the world, what greater motivation could you have? I know when I hear his journey, it gives me hope that if Ed can chase his dreams and come to understand and deal with life's challenges and carve his way out to success, that I can do that as well, as long as I keep that motivation and desire pure. If you're hearing this part, yeah, it means you made it all the way to the end of the episode, and you are a true fan. Thank you so much for listening. I know I say this every episode, but it truly means the world to me that so many of you like listening to the show and hearing the episodes I craft together. As you all know, this takes a ton of work. I know I've been a little late with some of the episodes lately, trying to get back on track, but the prints, putting out these YouTube versions of the episodes, everything it's a lot of work. I don't one person, so thank you for always understanding and continuing to listen. If you want to help the show in any way, please, of course, tell everyone you know about the show, leave a review or a comment wherever you listen. If you want to take that support a step further, check out Patreon page at patreon.com/MyArtIsRael. I'm working on getting some new content up there soon. And consider collecting a limited edition art print off of MyArtIsRael.com. I'm doing a lot of prints with previous guests and prints with other art friends. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.